Muddy Knees Media.
Totally Football Show, Champions League. In London, it's surge and destroy as Gnabry gives Chelsea their worst Bayern experience since signing Shevchenko. In Madrid, KDB and Jesus leave Real in pieces, and return leg will be one that Ramos misses. Next up for City, from the Bernabeu to the Carabao, Villa in the League Cup final, 9-1 across their last two meetings, this could be tie. We look ahead to that, to derbies that aren't derbies, and a huge weekend of action in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And we're off, listener, with you alongside us. Woof. Duncan Alexander's here.
Hi, James.
Hi, Duncan. Julien Laurent struggled in through the snow.
Bonjour.
To you too, Julien. And the one, the only, Pat Nevin is here too. Hi, Pat.
Hi, struggling through the snow. Excuse me. He said in front of a Scotsman.
Right.
Yes, there is a flurry out there.
There is a flurry. Nice word, by the way. Pat, how's it going at West Ham?
It's been interesting, you know, because I woke up and my wife came upstairs with the newspaper and said, you should have told me about this, that you're the new West Ham coach. And I said, well, somebody should have told me, because I don't know.
So it's another Nevin.
Yeah, it's Paul Nevin, not Pat Nevin. But honestly, it took legs and ran.
What, they actually put it in the paper that it was you?
Yes.
Good Lord.
So, I mean, and a nice story with it. Oh, Pat and David are old friends, which is true.
Right.
And went into such detail that I would be very good for the club. And I'm going, yeah, but there's a kind of minor problem there. It's right. Not me.
All right. Well, so to sum up, after the first round of last 16 matches, pretty rough time for the English clubs. Only Man City managed to actually score a goal and indeed win. It wasn't great for Spanish sides either, although Atletico Madrid got the win. Real Madrid humbled. And how about Napoli's performance against Barcelona? Lyon flying the French flag, though, Jules.
Yes, great win. If you previewed that game and previewed the Chelsea-Bayern, for example, it was similar. For Chelsea to beat Bayern, they had to be excellent in both boxes, which they were not, and they got hammered. And for Lyon, it was going to be exactly the same against Juve. And as good as they were in the first half and they hit the bar and then scored that goal, they were not so good in the second half, but defended so well, like really heroes, and Juve could not find a way, and they might still get out in the second leg, but that first leg was very, very good for them.
You know who has done really well? Which nation's team has done really well, not just in the Champions League, but the Europa
Germans.
League?
Germans.
It's the Germans. They've won every knockout game so far in, as I say, both the Champions League and the Europa League, although, of course, there's a whole batch of Europa League games coming up this evening. How about that?
How can we keep across those games anyway?
Yeah, actually, Duncan, they're all going to be broadcast on BT Sport.
Oh.
And yes, there is a goal show from 8 o'clock, Jules.
Indeed.
We'll be on the goal show, pretending to know what on earth's going on across 8 Europa League matches.
Nice.
Damn. Okay, let's begin though with what we do know, what has happened this week. Starting off with the big one Wednesday, Real Madrid Man City.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Real Madrid 1, Man City 2. The shock scoreline at the Bernabeu on Wednesday night. A huge win this for Pep Guardiola against his old enemy on the field and arguably Man City's new ones off it, a la UEFA, the suits. What a performance. Duncan.
Yeah, it was an intriguing match. I saw a few people in the first half sort of complaining there wasn't much going on, but it was tactically really, really interesting. I mean, I think the fact there were no offsides until very late on in the game showed how deep, particularly Man City, was sitting. You know, they were often just had the defence strung across their own penalty area at times. Even so, when Madrid took the lead, you did feel it was going to be another one of those nights for City in Europe. But they stuck to the game plan, which was, as well, I'm sure we'll discuss, an unusual Pep special in Europe.
Right. Okay, so Pep, his two highly rated striker, he dropped one and fielded the other as a kind of left wing back. And then he stuck two midfielders up top. What was the game plan? And I'm going to say, did it work? I mean, obviously, they did win, but did it work?
Yeah, I think it worked. I think the game plan, like he explained on BT Sport after the game, was they thought the weakness in that Real Madrid defence was Carvajal, which I think is fair. I think a lot of people could have also found this one out. You know, if you look at Mendy, Varane and Ramos and then Carvajal, and to exploit the weakness of Carvajal, if you put less a Bernardo Silva, because Sterling is not fit. Otherwise, Sterling would have started. But Sterling is not fit enough maybe to start that game. And you look at it and say, okay, if I put Gabriel Jesus there, he can cause a lot of problems to Carvajal. And then we put Bernardo Silva and De Bruyne. De Bruyne, who's already played that sort of 9.5 position against Arsenal, for example, he was really high as well. And because he plays so well between the lines, that was always going to be a good position for him. And then Bernardo Silva, too, just caused problem with, you know, his pace and how quick he is with the ball and everything, his movement, to mess things around a bit. And I think he worked perfectly because Gabriel Jesus had a big impact. Sterling had a big impact when he came on as well against Carvajal again. And then Bernardo Silva and De Bruyne caused loads of problems. Even if Bernardo, if you look at his game, you think, well, what did he do really? But just by his movement, he would have caused problems to Ramos and Varane.
It was similar to what they did against United in the away leg of the Carabao Cup semi-final. So that was almost like you could almost imagine that was a kind of practice run for Pep, thinking ahead to the Real Madrid game in some ways. But yeah, I mean, it works, as you said. I thought it was quite a nice touch that City in their Hacienda-themed kit conceded to Isco.
Right.
Which was,
you know, one letter short.
One letter short.
Yeah.
Do you remember the film Days of Thunder, the Jerry Bruckheimer vehicle?
Of course, the NASCAR.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman special. That's where they got together.
Yeah, it is, yeah. But you know the scene in it where he's lost his nerve and he's sort of driving through the smoke.
Smoke, yeah. I remember that.
And he comes out and you can feel the kind of the fear and the worry drop away as he's like, I'm back. It felt very much like that when City equalised in that game. Suddenly, you know, a brilliant cross from De Bruyne digging it out, Jesus jumping, heading it in, and it felt suddenly like everything, just all the tension fell off City.
Right. After that, they were cruising. Pat,
like the metaphor. My metaphor was really, it's one of those things when you've had an injury, you know, a cruciate or something like that, but your first block tackle, you're worried about it, your first block tackle, you hit it, gone. Everything gone, you never ever think about it again. And it was a wee bit, days of thunder in your knee kind of things.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a bit like that. I agree with the tactics. I thought they were really interesting because immediately they seemed daft. And I have to throw in a name here. Andy Roxburgh did it. I remember doing it when I was playing. And you're going to love this. Against Italy. And I think it was Maldini at the back, along with some other pretty good guy. Go on, who should it be?
This would be in Rome, the build-up to the 94 World Cup, is it?
Correct.
Correct.
So who did they play up front?
Casiraghi?
No, who did we play up front?
Oh, who did you play up front? I have no idea.
Exactly, me. So they wanted to play me up front. Very much Bernardo Silva-like.
Right, yeah.
And the idea is, there's no point in putting up a normal centre-forward against them because they probably ain't going to do it.
Mm.
And, you know, but if you put someone completely different, but does a different thing in a different way and brings people in a different way. And I like to think, and immediately I saw that. And I had a particularly successful night that night against Italy because I got food poisoned the night before and couldn't play. But it's not unusual. It's not undone. It's done before. I've
not
seen
unprecedented.
It before, and I like it. I still think this is all secondary to the biggest tactical shock that Pep pulled off in the evening. He decided to play two centre-backs in the middle of his defence. And I don't think I've ever seen Pep. It's been a long time.
Didn't last long, to be fair.
He didn't. No,
half an hour.
That is the big cloud over it. Yeah, Laporte's injury, which we still don't know how long he's going to be out for.
Right.
Him coming off crying doesn't look good, to be fair.
Although Fernandinho did do a stand-up job once he dropped back to take his place. What about Man City scoring a penalty, Duncan?
I think we can now accept that that Edison is not going to be taking a penalty for Manchester City. It was a brilliant penalty from De Bruyne. Obviously, he missed his only other one for City, but he tucked it in the, you know, in the reverse corner, and he looks like he's been taking them for years. So I think that's probably closed that book.
There is a slight but.
Oh.
It was against Thibaut Courtois, who's rubbish at saving penalties.
Is he?
Yeah. He's notably really quite poor at them.
Right.
I mean, the entirety of the time at Chelsea, Thibaut
didn't look great either on Gabriel Jesus's goal.
I mean, I still think he's a great goalkeeper.
He should save the header big time.
The other sabida news involving a player going off before the 90 was, of course, Sergio Ramos picking up that almost unprecedented red card.
Yeah, it's very rare for him to be sent off.
26 now in his career, which is quite a lot.
In his career, just for Real Madrid.
He's halfway to a full deck.
You don't count Spain and you don't count Sevilla as well.
How many with them?
26 just at Real Madrid,
which
is quite incredible, to be fair. Yeah.
But in the pantheon of Ramos red cards, I think this one was one of the harsher ones. I mean, I don't think it was a...
What do you mean? Harsher in which way? Wow. He's the last defender. There's a foul. The foul is there, right? It's a foul, right? So why wouldn't you give the red card?
He runs across him. I mean, you can't rule out the dark art. I mean, this is a man that managed to dislocate Mohamed Salah's shoulder without even looking. But
come on, he never... that man is a genius if he meant that. They never meant that against
him. Yeah, I think it was harsh. I'm with Pat.
Okay. Sergio Ramos, by the way, has more career red cards, according to Hugh Davis, than the three most sent-off players in Premier League history put together.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I'm a big fan of Zidane, now, not just because he's French. And
Did you interview him recently, Jules?
Yeah, back in November 18, but the video only came this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they kept it. And it's a really interesting, not because I did it, but it's a very interesting video on his approach as a manager and his relationship with players. And it's funny when he says, like, I can't tell Cristiano Ronaldo or Luka Modric how to play football because they're the best in the world. However, I can put them in the right environment to make sure that they play as best as they can. It's a very interesting interview, and I would have loved him yesterday to win the tactical battle with Pep, and he didn't. And that saddened me, because I think when you're second best on the night like they were on Wednesday night, and you're lucky to get 1-0 up because there's a mistake by Rodri, there's an even bigger mistake by Walker, and you still manage to score, I think after that you have to be very, very wise and clever in the way you're going to manage your team. And to take off Vinicius, who was really the only one to be able to create something just with the pace. And I know he's young and sometimes he's a bit all over the place, but at least he was a worry for the City defence. And you take him off, okay, fair enough. But at least if you take him off, maybe strengthen your midfield, or maybe, I don't know, go very defensive and bring another defender. I don't know, anything. But to replace him by Gareth Bale 15 minutes before the end, when you're 1-0 up in a game that you should never be in the lead, I thought was a big mistake, and he came back to haunt them, because
that's when everything happened.
After that, and it's not Gareth Bale's fault if they conceded two goals, but I think that was a wrong decision to make.
Do you think there's a few Madridistas, you can say it probably better than me, who think it was probably Gareth Bale's fault? It was a good opportunity to blame Gareth on that one.
Very possibly, Pat. Now, for Real Madrid, they got Barcelona this weekend, while City go from the Meringues to Aston Villa. League Cup final awaits them Sunday. We'll talk about that soon enough. But next up, let's hear about the game that you two went to see at Stamford Bridge on Tuesday.
Player returns department.
Oh, hello, yeah. I'm trying to return a striker, please, a Brazilian. I want my money back, basically.
Oh, what seems to be the problem with him?
The problem? He's £40 million worth of rubbish. That's the problem. He was supposed to help us achieve our goals, but, I don't think he knows what a goal is, to be fair. This fella's had more haircuts than goals.
Sorry. Says here you've committed to a 5.5-year deal. This Geordie manager can't get his money back, but you can with Paddy Power's Money Back Specials. Paddy Power. T's and C's apply. 18+.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Davis bursting into action again, leaving Christensen for dead. Lewandowski waiting in the middle, tapping! Robert Lewandowski, that's 39 goals this season for Bayern Munich's hitman.
Yep, Tuesday Pat and Jules were at Stamford Bridge to see Chelsea humbled 3-0. By a rampant Bayern Munich in this week's second biggest story involving an exposed willy.
Yeah.
After the Torre MP, of course. A couple of tweets here. Daniel Story says, it points out, in the space of 5 months, Bayern Munich have inflicted Spurs' worst ever European home defeat and now Chelsea's worst ever European home defeat. Duncan Alexander offers that 4.5% of all the home goals that Chelsea have ever conceded in the Champions League have come since Ben Fogel make a new life in the country started earlier this evening on Channel 5. That's incredible, Duncan.
There's what the Ben Fogel.
It was
got
an amazing
show. For...
No, but the the fact that that's almost 5% of all the goals.
Yeah, it was more than I was expecting when I looked it up. genuinely.
I mean, I don't even know.
All right, so there you were at the Bridge. Did you witness the new favourites for this year's Champions League?
I'm not sure, really.
Why? What could stop them?
I just don't think Chelsea are good enough. Right, joking aside. Yeah. No, I like them a lot. I think Chelsea got it wrong tactically. And by the way, I understand it, and I would have made exactly the same mistake myself. So you have to sometimes hold your hand. They went for a 3-4-3.
Right.
It worked so incredibly well against Spurs. I was at the Spurs game on the Saturday, and you're really impressed by how well it worked. They played this high tempo, fantastic. And I thought, yeah, you got to stick with that. And it worked against Spurs away. He thought Jose Mourinho, you got to go for that. But in the back of your mind, they tried the same against Arsenal, and it was shambles. Mm. So it was one of those ones, do you take the chance? Took the chance, wrong. And the reason why it was wrong, the variety of reasons why it was wrong, Jorginho and Kovacic usually completely dominate games, but there was two of them in there, two midfielders in there against the quality of Bayern, and they never got a kick. And I'm not just making that up, and that's just not a phrase. They got 35% of the possession, Chelsea, at home, when they're a possession-based team. Mm. Who, when they played Manchester City at home, Chelsea had more possession than Manchester City. So it didn't work. That was completely wrong. But in many ways, it's not Frank's naivety. It's just that's a perfectly reasonable mistake to make. Or, right. You know, and whether it would have been different any other way, I doubt. But had you put a midfield in there for Chelsea with, if you had availability of Kante, yeah, Kovacic, and, you know, Jorginho, I'm not saying Chelsea would have won because they were second best in every area,
right.
But it wouldn't have looked like that. So not to get over carried away with Bayern. I like them, but favourites, right. Not sure.
Okay, because a lot of people have tried to stop them in the Champions League this year. So far, no one has managed it. They've won every single one of their games in the competition. They're only the third team in Champions League history to do that. Curiously, the previous two, Barcelona in 2002-03 and Real Madrid in 14-15, and neither of them went on to win the trophy. But I feel like Bayern, and we were talking about this a little bit with Rafa in Tuesday's show, have gone under the radar a bit because they started under Niko Kovac and it felt like they were another of those teams that was performing well because of their big names rather than how they performed as a team. Now, under Hansi Flick, that's completely changed.
Yes, you're right. And I thought, I have to say, apart from the fact that Kimmich and Thiago Alcantara were amazing in midfield, and it's just a pleasure to, if you go to a game and you can just spend your game watching them play and the movement and obviously how good they are technically and how well they complement each other. But I thought the way Bayern played in triangles, often in 2-3 touches, and considering the fact that they've got a right back in Pavard who's not a right back, and it would be even better if they had a proper right back at right back, because the triangles, especially on the right hand side with Coman and Müller, would be even better. But I thought some of the football they played, and they should have been 2-0 up at halftime instead of 0-0, for example. They could easily have scored six.
I would disagree. I think it should have been 3-0 up.
Yeah, or 3-0 up.
Half-time, they were
even.
Really,
but I agree with Pat, and especially now with Lewandowski's injury, if they get a tough, tough draw in the quarterfinals and he's not there for the two legs, I think they will really struggle without him. As good as Gnabry is, as good as the Alphonso Davies story is incredible, as good as Thiago and Kimmich are in midfield, defensively, it's still Jerome Boateng and Alaba playing as a centre-back when it's clearly not his position. And we saw a couple of times that Chelsea had half chances or half opportunities when they went 3v3 or on the counter, Mason Mount. And had they had a bit more pace, they would have troubled them a bit more even. So I'm still a bit, not sceptical, but I want to see against a better opposition.
Julian, the Lewandowski injury, which came curiously after the game had finished, or at least the news of it came after the game had finished, he performed the warm down and everything. So what are the details on that?
It's a little fracture on his tibia, which saying we'll have a plaster for 10 days and then he can. So it can't be that serious. It's not like a broken leg, like a full broken leg.
Right.
But Dr. Müller-Wohlfahrt think that it's around 4 weeks off. Out for 4 weeks, which again, you know, takes you in a title race in the Bundesliga that's closer than ever for them, with Dortmund and Gladbach and Leipzig, obviously, and then the Champions League coming, with the quarterfinals coming at some point, because right. They will qualify.
4 weeks, he would be back for the quarterfinals.
Yes, could be, but still, you know, you don't know if he will be 4 weeks and if he can't play those two legs and in what kind of fitness he will be. Coman picked up an injury as well during the game, and we don't know yet exactly how long that will be. And Perisic is injured as well. So it's when you look at that way, you're thinking, okay, maybe they're just not as favourite as a Liverpool or a Man City or someone like that. Yeah.
Just on Chelsea, I pointed out during the game that the last two managers to win European trophies for Chelsea were Rafa Benitez and Maurizio Sarri, neither of whom are going to ever have statues outside Stamford Bridge, I suspect. And, you know, Lampard, as we've said before, has got a lot of slack given he's a club legend, but Chelsea have now lost 8 games at home this season, which is the most since 85-86. So it is starting to look a little bit wobbly, I think, for them.
Wobbly, but he's not in danger. Absolutely not in danger. Because they don't mind it, and mid-table will be absolutely fine. Can I just go a wee bit back? There was a wee sideline word from Julian there about Alphonso Davies. So he's only played, is it 20-odd games? And he is clearly world-class and will, for the next 10 years, be one of the best footballers. And I have no idea if he'll stay there at left full-back area. but he is astonishing. I mean, it's not just the pace, is it? And Gnabry's got he's got Mbappe pace.
Yeah.
He's got really Mbappe pace. So that whole left-hand side, you're talking about the lovely little plays in the right-hand side. So there's so much to like about him. And watching the game in up close, I've seen Kimmich quite a few times, right? We all know his best position, which is everywhere. And I didn't know he had the delivery. He's got the delivery of as good as you'll see around. He took all the corners and they were vicious. So they've got speciality things all over the field.
Goals scored in London this season as Serge Gnabry 6, Alexandre Lacazette also 6.
Yeah.
Did you see the little clip of the Sky Germany presenter after the game asking Thomas Müller about Serge Gnabry's extraordinary strike rate in London, and Müller responding, yeah, Arsenal are perhaps asking themselves about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit the same with Alphonso Davies. Serge Gnabry, when he arrived at Arsenal, or Ismaël Benacer, who's now playing really well for AC Milan in Italy and with Algeria, they were just not ready. But it happens. It's not because you sign a player that he has to be ready straight away to shine for your team. They were very young. Gnabry was very young. He had to learn a lot of things. He had problems with injuries. I think his weight as well was an issue at the time. And it was just not meant to happen because it was early. It's easy not to say, oh, look at him at Bayern. Why didn't he do that 4 years ago? Because he was not ready. He was not the same kind of player. He had to go through two loan spells in Germany before being able to come into that club and establish himself. And, you know, Davies is similar. People say to me, oh, but why English club didn't go and scout him in Vancouver, in MLS, or French clubs? French clubs made offers. He had trials here in England. He could have very well signed for United or a club in England.
Yeah, had a trial lined up.
Yeah, definitely.
Think,
no? He chose Bayern Munich for many reasons.
Right.
But until Niklas Süle and Boateng and Lucas Hernandez got injured, he was not in the team. He was a left winger who could not get in the team. It's the fact that Alaba moved from left back to centre back and they needed another left back and they said, you know what, let's try Alphonso because he's left footed and because he's a quick learner, which is true, and he's a very clever kid. And he worked out great. But if Süle, Lucas and Boateng don't get injured, I'm not sure Alphonso Davies is having the season he's having right now at left back.
Football's littered with, it's like sliding doors everywhere, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and you know, everyone makes the thing. Remember the thing when Harry Redknapp nearly sold Gareth Bale to Birmingham because he wasn't working out at Spurs and everyone's like, ha ha, what? But at the time,
exactly.
No one would have batted an eyelid.
Yeah, so. It's not Wenger's fault, it's not Gnabry's fault, it's not Arsenal's fault.
Can I say exactly the same thing, which Mo Salah and Kevin De Bruyne
exactly.
At Chelsea.
And
everyone's saying, what a terrible mistake they made. Chelsea won the league that year. So short term, they made the right decision, but long term, it was a stinker of all stinkers. It's hard to see early on.
Chelsea have Bournemouth at the weekend, but we're going to talk about more Champions League next, the other games.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Tuesday night in Naples, it was Napoli 1-1 with Barcelona, admiring what was almost a classic Italian knockout round, tactical shutdown job. James Horncastle. James, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
Gattonaccio, James. almost a perfect night.
It was for Napoli, because who would have thought a few months ago that they would be able to do this, get a result against Barcelona. Now, Barcelona are another team in crisis, but certainly...
Top of the Liga in crisis.
Top of the Liga in crisis. It's their very own peculiar kind of crisis. But I think what's great about watching this Gattuso side is seeing more or less the same group of players we all kind of really enjoyed watching under Maurizio Sarri play a completely different style, which in this case was let's stay back, defend deep, and then look to hit on the counter. Gattuso did accept after the game that that wasn't entirely the plan. Barcelona did kind of force Napoli back. But even so, to limit them to no shots on target in the first half, and to come out of that game with some sense of regret, really, listening to some of the players, Insigne in particular, felt they'd really missed an opportunity to win that game. They felt that Barcelona were beatable. Callejon missed a really good opportunity to put them back in the lead at 1-1. But I think they'll go to the Camp Nou confident that they can maybe progress.
Dries Mertens, it was who opened the scoring, equaling the all-time scoring record for the club with Marek Hamšík. His injury, I felt, cost them a lot because a lot of those chances, and there were so many chances towards the end of the game against Barcelona that went astray, that Dries Mertens maybe would have maybe would have been more effective on. But Antoine Griezmann, of course, equalising for the Catalans after some lovely build-up there as well. So where do you think this leaves this? Leaves the tie. Barcelona are a little bit underwhelming. They will have no Busquets and no Vidal in the second leg through suspension. What's your thoughts?
Well, and also this was a depleted Barcelona side. I think, again, that explains why there was a sour taste in Insigne's mouth after the game, because they don't have any fit fullbacks. Now, they might have them back for the second leg in 3 weeks' time. Barcelona remain very difficult to beat at the Camp Nou. So I think even after a performance like that from Napoli, and what we've seen from them in recent weeks, where they have been able to get results against top Italian sides, be it Juventus, Inter, and Lazio as well, I think Barcelona must still go into the tie as favourites. But certainly, it is a Barcelona side that has lost its aura, seems very disjointed. And Quique Setién, even though the team is back on top of the table in La Liga, they don't seem to have dramatically improved, at least on that showing. So it would be fantastic, really, for this very strange Napoli outfit, vintage, on the back of what has been the most crisis-hit, disappointing season in a decade, to maybe reach the last reach the quarterfinals.
And Mertens at the heart of the issues they've been having, and Insigne. And it's interesting to see the papers since the game beginning to talk about possibly them staying. A lot of the rebels, the players who'd refused to go into Retiro way back in, when was it, October, now becoming almost too important to the club to think about moving on.
Well, and you saw the attachment that Mertens has to the club. I mean, his celebration, which waggling his tongue out afterwards was a tribute to the kit man and the guy who makes their coffee during the games, who was doing that dance on a day at the training centre a few weeks ago. And you heard the chants after he scored, and particularly after he injured, for Ciro, Ciro, which is the name that they've given him because Mertens is this adopted Neapolitan. And I think you're absolutely right, James, in sensing that the momentum swung a little bit back in Barcelona's favour after he went off injured, because Mertens, more than any other player on that Napoli side, seems to really raise his game on European nights. He's their top scorer of all time in European history. Yeah, they'll hope to recover him. It looks like he'll only be out for 10 days, I think, with this ankle injury. But they'll certainly need him in Catalonia.
Indeed. All right then, James, many thanks. Look forward to seeing you back here on the Totally Football Show soon.
Pleasure.
James Horncastle. Hey, Jules, while we're at it on the subject of the Champions League, the other game, Wednesday night, Lyon defeating Juventus 1-0. Ooh. Jules, how big a surprise was this Lyon performance?
We thought they could have that in them, but it had to be the perfect game. Yeah. So going forward,
did you expect it?
I thought it was going to be a 1-1 draw. I thought Juve would score. There was no way I could see this Juve side, even not playing well, even struggling with Sarri ball and him to get his message across, like James explained on Tuesday show and all of that. I still thought they would score.
Right.
They had 14 shots and none on target, which, I mean, okay, maybe they could have had a penalty at the end and the ref was kind to Lyon, I think, not to give either the one on Dybala or the one on Cristiano.
Yeah.
But 14 shots at that level, none on target, I was like, wow, okay.
Juve were kind of brain dead in their approach, and Sarri was repeating the same thing after the game about how he couldn't get his message across.
He's been there since December.
Come on, manager, though.
It's not a great
for him to come out and say, yeah, I wanted them to play 100 kilometres an hour, and they've played 10 kilometres an hour. You think, like, what? Like this is
Well,
baffling.
I think one of the issues, and it was a surprise the way Lyon played, or at least the performance they put in, it wasn't so much a surprise Juve's performance, because this is how they've been for some months now. They've been squeaking by against teams that they should have been beating. They've not been displaying, as you say, Sarri ball in the way that at least it's understood. And I think it goes back to this thing of when you're an incredibly dominant team in your own league, and I know they're in a title race this year, but they haven't been for 7-8 years, I think it means you lose that kind of desperation to fight for everything. You have that kind of entitlement. I think this probably applies to PSG as well.
But I think
you think it's always going to work out, even if it's not working out.
True, but I think the ruthlessness that they've had the last 8 years came from the bench as well. And if you don't have a ruthless manager on your bench like Sarri, and it's not Allegri or Conte, then I think you lose that side, because that comes very much from the spirit that your manager is implementing on his dressing room. Because the tactic is like, okay, the manager tells you how to play and you do this. But that sort of determination and ruthlessness can only come from him. Why is he still there?
He's only just come.
But it's 8 months. And after 8 months, himself says, this is not working.
The top of the league, Jules.
Yeah, but it's not working. And my issue is, they might not win the league, and they certainly won't win the Champions League if they keep playing like this. Mm-hmm. Because I think
the issue is that the people that they would like to take over are not available yet. Maybe. He wasn't their first choice. He was, what, third, fourth on the list?
Yes, probably. But you see, my point is, okay, before, maybe the football was not great with Allegri, but they had that winning mentality and that ruthlessness.
Right.
Sarri comes in, he tries his stuff, it's not working. He admits himself, 8 months on, I can't do it. I'm going to go back to what they know how to do with Allegri. But he's not Allegri, so they don't have that ruthlessness that they had under Allegri.
I'm amazed that he's actually changed his tune and said he wants to play the way the previous manager did. Because I would have thought he'd have walked out of a job before doing that. Because Sarri wasn't like that before. Mm-hmm. Sarri would never have changed him. It's a morality thing with him. So for him to change it because of the strength of the characters, the players or whatever. But I look at that group of players that he's got there and I'm thinking, well, that's not a Sarri ball team. People expecting it to happen in 8 months, but shocks me. It takes longer than that because it's a whole concept. I thought Sarri would have walked out and he probably should have. And by the way, Cristiano Ronaldo, Sarri ball, no chance.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere. This is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Jules, we're going to talk about the Carabao Cup final. But first of all, what is Clowngate?
Yeah, very quickly. As you know, since Rudy Garcia joined Lyon, he was not really accepted by the Lyon fans, especially the ultras. So they keep criticising him everywhere, especially on social media, where the Lyon fans are a bit like the Liverpool fans here in the UK, in France. The Lyon fans are very, very active on social media. At the beginning of the week, there's a photo of Rudy Garcia as a clown, with a clown face.
Right. Was he actually, or was it kind of Photoshop?
It was a Photoshop photo of him as a clown.
Right.
The club took it very seriously and put out a statement saying that they're going to sue everyone on social media that's putting out photos of Rudy Garcia as a clown because they think he's disrespectful. So the ultras have gone like, hang on a minute.
Disrespectful
our coach,
clowns?
Yeah, exactly. They said like, our coach is a clown, so why can't we picture him as a clown?
Really,
and the problem is that now he had the opposite effect, is that now everybody's posting memes of clowns about Garcia and Jean-Michel Aulas as well and all that kind of stuff. And he got out of hand completely. And he has put more pressure on the club and Garcia before the game with that clown gate than they wanted to, like, you know, keep it down, basically. So.
Tell me something about the legal framework of France that you can sue someone or suggest suing someone for putting
whoever you want. Anyway, that's an extraordinary story, Jules. Thank you for bringing us
obviously
that.
Obviously, it's the Clan 1 and Ultras 0 at the moment because he won last night. So.
Voila. It's like they leaned in to smell his flower.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
Carabao Cup final on Sunday, 4:30 on Sunday, actually, at Wembley. Man City are taking on Aston Villa, everyone. Slight shift of topic here. City are going to be going for their fifth League Cup win in 7 seasons. Villa, somewhat the underdogs here, looking for their first trophy of any kind since they won this competition back in 1996. Do you remember that, Pat? It was a 3-0 win over Leeds, the highlight being a stunning opening goal from Savo Milosevic.
Oh! Milosevic, they called him. Well, he didn't miss this one.
Can Villa do something similar? After all, they beat Liverpool in the quarterfinals, didn't they?
That is true. Yeah. The Liverpool Invitational Cub Scout 11, yeah. I don't think so. I actually think the result for City in Madrid is bad for Villa. Because I think if...
Totally agree.
Psychologically, if they'd stumbled in Madrid, then this could be another banana skin to clown themselves into, as the Leon ultras might say. But I think now City will be really confident. You know, they can bring Aguero in.
Or to bring in your Days of Thunder. It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Aguero had a nice rest in midweek. Mm. So he's got a particularly good record against Villa. 9 goals in his last 5 starts against them, which is pretty good. So I can't really see Villa doing it. I mean, there's an outside chance it could be one of those cup finals where you get a player, in this case Jack Grealish, who really kind of, you know, turns it on. But I think Villa's defence is just too ropey to
go. Last two meetings between these two sides, well, in this season in the league, a 3-0 win for Man City and then a 6-1. It is indeed the worst defence in the Premier League and the best attack in the Premier League facing off. And Dean Smith coming into this game full of opprobrium for his, or criticism at least, for his players in their performance against Southampton last weekend.
And Sterling will probably start as well. You think that after the 20 minutes
right
he
back,
had?
Do you think what will Pep
no,
do?
I think we will go back to the normal sort of 4-3-3 formation. It'd be interesting to see maybe where De Bruyne plays, but Sterling would be then Aguero, like Dan said as well. And it's hard to see how Villa can even tactically. I mean, they can. They will play five at the back in 5-4-1 formation, and then hope for not conceding too many chances. That their keeper, Pepe Reina, has an amazing game, and then if they have one chance on set pieces or something and score it, but it's one of those games that it's hard to see them winning it.
I'm contractually obliged to mention John McGinn in every single programme I do.
Is he back?
No. Oh. I don't care. I'm still doing it because I've watched him in his Hibs right. days, and I adored that kid so much for what he did. But if you look at some of the results that the Villa have had, you know, really don't write them off that easily. I mean, the semi-final against Leicester put a really strong side. And teams aren't generally hammering them. You know, there was the Watford was a 2-1. There was a 1-1 against Brighton. You know, they're not getting hammered apart from that 6-1 that you mentioned by them. It's a possibility. It's an outside possibility. I can remember, because I've got such knowledge around me here, I'm not going to engage my brain. I'm going to ask you. There was a game that Aston Villa played at Wembley against Arsenal a few years back. Was it a final?
FA Cup final.
And they lost 4-0. And I remember before it saying, there's this kid called Grealish playing, and I think he's unbelievable, you know, and he stunk the place out on the day. Yeah. He never kicks a ball. And, you know, I think Cazorla had a brilliant game that day, right? So if Grealish can walk back after those years now and walk in and have the game that you mentioned, Dunk, there is a possibility. Because remember, the City have got a problem. Defensively, they're not great all the time.
Laporte's out.
So Laporte's out.
And Claudio Bravo will be back in goal. This, to be fair. So
don't. I was at a game the other night there. I do go home sometimes, but the Liverpool game against West Ham, and by the way, what a great game of football it was. And it was 20-1 in a two horse race for Liverpool to win. And so, I don't think this is a 20-1 one. I think it's much, much less than that. And West Ham should have won that game, or could have won that game. So, I'm not writing off yet.
All right, Pat. There it is. We'll find out what happens 4:30 on Sunday afternoon. But since you mentioned Liverpool-West Ham, Monday night's 3-2 thriller at Anfield, let's move on next to the Premier League. Listeners, it's time to say hello to today's sponsors, HelloFresh. HelloFresh takes the hassle out of meal planning and food shopping by delivering top quality, fresh, pre-portioned ingredients right to your door. And with step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe guides, you can cook delicious meals in next to no time, whether you're a dab hand in the kitchen or a complete novice. So say goodbye to those post-work dashes to the supermarket, sauces from a jar and ready meals blitzed in the microwave. Instead, get your chops around HelloFresh's 10-minute pulled chicken feta and black bean tacos, their delicious Sri Lankan fish curry with fluffy jasmine rice, or my favourite, Sicilian-style penne caponata with sausage meat and aubergine. Whether you're cooking for a family, need a balanced 600-calorie veggie dish for one, or looking to try something new, with 21 different recipes to choose from each week, HelloFresh has something for everyone. So for the simple way to cook fresh, head to hellofresh.co.uk and use the offer code TOTALLYFOOTBALLSHOW to get 50% off your first box and then 35% off your next three boxes. That's 50% off your first box and 35% off your next three boxes at hellofresh.co.uk when you enter the Totally Football Show with no spaces. Premier League this weekend, just 8 games. Friday sees Norwich host Leicester. Saturday, Brighton have their not a derby with Palace. Bournemouth will be trying to do a Bayern on Chelsea. Newcastle face Burnley. West Ham, narrowly beaten in that spirited performance by Liverpool on Monday, host Southampton, while Liverpool go hunting a record 19th win at Watford, who are a point from safety. Sunday, there's a battle for fourth and fifth, ahoy, as Everton take on Man United and Spurs host Wolves. Let's begin with the league leaders. All that stands between Liverpool and that record is Nigel Pearson and the boys from the Vicarage. Can they hold out? What do you think? Pat, you mentioned the 3-2 win over West Ham on Monday night. They do this a lot, don't they, Liverpool? They narrow performances against teams in the bottom three. Norwich was another one. And that's what Watford are.
Do you know, and everybody's done it, and I'm going to do it as well. I'm going to offend the Liverpool fans by saying, remember Manchester United team that always used to score those late goals, right? There was 10 minutes to go. I'm sitting up in that main stand looking down, and the commentator turned around and he said, there's 10 minutes to go, there's 2-1 down. Oh, it's going to happen. I went, that's an eternity at Anfield against Liverpool, the way they play just now. And the way they went through the gears. And they only did it for 10 minutes or 5 minutes or so. Mm. It was enough to do it. Now, to be honest, they could have lost other goals as well. But they are amazing for their game management at the moment. Certainly domestically, their game management's off the scale. There's lots of things. And I think every week you think of something different. But it's hard to ignore what the fullbacks are doing. Again, the number of goals. Now, I'm just going to pass this straight on to Duncan, because I'm sure you've got all the stats in front of you. But I'm stunned by the fullbacks.
Well, I mean, we probably remember that Trent Alexander-Arnold got into the Guinness Book of Records for a world record number of assists for a defender last season, 12. He's already equaled that with 11 games to go. So there's an outside chance. I mean, everyone's looking at De Bruyne for matching Henri's record of 20 in a season. There's an outside chance Trent could do it. So that would be incredible.
Well, he got two against West Ham. Yeah. And by the way, there was also a goal chopped off.
Third one. Yeah.
And also the other one was Robertson on the other side. And you look at the numbers last season with the both of them, and we always get Premier League numbers thrown at us, which I think is slightly unfair. It should be all the assists they had for all the games. They're ridiculous. They're getting assists numbers that any winger generally at any level would be delighted by.
Since the start of last season, Alexander-Arnold obviously 12 of 12, 24 assists. The entire Manchester United midfield, the famous midfield in the 98-99 season, only had 26 between them. So, I mean, that kind of puts it into some sort of perspective.
Weird, extraordinary and almost impossible to stop.
All right. They are going to be visiting a Watford team that is now without a win in 5 games. And Liverpool
played really well at Anfield. Remember, that was Nigel Pearson's first game or second game.
Right.
And they should have won that, or at least drew that one. They lost, I think, 2-1 maybe, but they played so, so well. So there might be reasons for them to cause problems.
Do you think they'll
Liverpool
stumble just when the record is there at their fingertips?
I don't think they'll stumble this weekend. But I think it won't be that easy at all for them. But They've won those games that were not easy when they were not playing great and still found a way of winning them. So,
right. I mean, just on wins and that, Mo Salah's won his last 33 Premier League games in a row because he missed the game at Old Trafford where Liverpool dropped points. Yeah,
yeah. He's also scored 8 goals in 5 appearances against the Hornets. Put the two things together and what do you got? We'll find out.
Yes.
Saturday tea time. West Ham, by the way, Pat, who were impressive on Monday night. Is that something they can build on, for example, this weekend as they host Southampton?
You know, I absolutely think so. Moyes has tried a number of things. I was at the game where they put against Leicester quite recently, and they started with that 5-4-1 kind of thing, and honestly, it was dreadful. It was worse than paint dry. It was vile to watch it. And then Moyes changed it in the second half and went, I might as well attack. We're getting hammered here. They attacked, and it looked worse. And you thought, oh my goodness, it's catch 22. There's nothing they can do, right? And he goes to Liverpool, and I'm sitting and watching, what are you going to do today? Because I can't see any way around it. And he matched them up. He just matched up player for player and said to his players, why don't you just have a go? And that is clearly the answer that he has to say. Doesn't matter if you beat 5-1 week and you win 1-0 the next week. That's 3 points out of 6. That's the level you need. And I think now he just has to say, and I have a suspicion after going to Anfield and matching them up and saying, no, we're going to have a go at you, I think that's what he's going to do. And if they do that, they've got a chance. And I think that's their only chance of getting out of this.
Southampton, they have a good record against Saints themselves, have a good record on the road. West Ham, just 1 point from safety at the moment, a point behind Villa, who aren't playing in the league this week. So a victory would take them out of the bottom three. Also coming up on the weekend, Saturday lunchtime, it's the A23 Derby, Brighton against Crystal Palace, a fixture with a proud place among the world's other made-up derbies. You've got one, haven't you, with Wickham?
Yeah, we've got a rivalry with Colchester, which was big in the 90s.
And why was that? Can you remember?
Yes, it dates back to the 1980s when Wickham and Colchester were drawn together in the FA Cup and there were no top flight games that day. So a load of West Ham fans came to support Colchester and a load of Chelsea fans came to support Wickham and Wickham's town centre got, remodeled. And then the following season, the two clubs were drawn against each other again. But this time, the two sets of fans just fought each other anyway without help from West Ham and Chelsea. And since then, it kind of, you know, we were both trying to get out of the conference in the early 90s. So my favourite thing about it was when Martin O'Neill went to Celtic as manager and they, the journalists were saying to him for his first Old Firm game, you know, how are you going to cope with the passion of the Old Firm and the kind of intensity? He said, look, if you've been through Colchester Wickham, you're prepared for anything. And most of the people in the room, he did. And most of the people were like, what? What is that?
That's amazing.
Incredible. All right. Well, similar story, I guess, for Brighton and Crystal Palace, the roots of whose enmity is way back in the mists of time, but involves Terry Venables and possibly the theft of a chant.
There was also the incident, wasn't there, when they played each other in the playoffs in the championship. I only found out yesterday, researching Pugate, as it's known, that a couple of years later, Palace admitted that it was their coach driver.
Oh, really?
Who was ill. So there was a lot of recriminations at Brighton at the time because that someone thought a Brighton employee had done it.
Yeah.
But it turned out it was just...
Had left feces.
Parking the bus to a new bleak 11.
Right, but it was actually the bus driver.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good Lord. Well, moving forward to this weekend, Brighton, the only Premier League team yet to win in 2020. Palace only got their first win of the calendar year last Saturday. What are your thoughts?
I think it's going to be, I mean, all derby games or faux derby games are pretty, you know, scrappy affairs generally. I think this has got the potential to take the biscuit. I mean, both teams in not very good form. I mean, it's Roy Hodgson's 100th Premier League game in charge of Palace, which is a little milestone. Right. I love the fact he's got such the most incredible consistency, Hodgson. His win percentage at his club's 36% at West Brom. Wow. 35% at Liverpool, 35% at Blackburn, 34% at Fulham, right, and 33% at Palace. So, you know, slight room for improvement, but not much.
Wow, that is remarkable, isn't it? Okay, let's move on then to the race for fourth and fifth, which sounds dramatic this weekend. A key fixture in that comes at Goodison Park Sunday at 2 o'clock as Everton host Man United. This, Pat, was the scene of arguably Solskjaer's biggest humiliation so far as United boss, and obviously that's quite a broad field. But they had a 4-0 defeat there last April. And you remember he had to go and apologise to the travelling fans. This United, they look different though. They look better now.
They do, but so do Everton. It's an improvement from Everton. Certainly Carlo's changed quite a bit in there, and we have to throw a bit of Duncan Ferguson in there as well. I think this could be the game of the weekend. I think because there's positivity around the place, I think this is the one that you almost want to be at more than anyone else. For Man United, it is a little bit difficult because the difficult times they have had are the times they've looked terrible, actually. I was going to say Solskjaer-esque, that would have been harsh. But they don't look themselves, they don't look like a Manchester United team. I have been away from home. There was an Arsenal game a little while back there where it was so bad. You cannot believe how poor they were that night. Part of it was down to some of the bad decisions that Solskjaer made. But he's going to have to outthink a top-class manager again, and this time, who's actually getting the best out of his team. And I'm not sure Solskjaer's done that well.
What do you make, then, of Ancelotti's Everton? Are you convinced that there's a direction here?
Do you know the thing I like about it most, right? I was at Everton a couple of days ago. I went in to see some people there just before I went to the Liverpool game. And they say, we don't understand. Like, why has he come to us? It's so exciting that he's come to us. And, you know, he's such a world-class manager. And oddly, it's a couple of things. Number one, he probably came as a two-year, you know, Carlo thing. He's got there. He's fallen in love, by the way. He's absolutely fallen in love with the club. And that doesn't happen with all managers. And I was trying to figure out why he'd done it. I think it's something got to do with getting to a club that feels like the real thing again. You know, sometimes you're in these top world-class clubs, you can't feel it because it's very corporate above you.
Right.
Carlo wants something. And I included Chelsea in that as well. That was part of what was happening to him a lot of the time. He's walked into that club, and if you spend time in that club, it's extraordinary. The effect it has in the community, the closeness it has to the community. Carlo spends his time walking about in the centre of Liverpool.
smelling the mints.
It's unbelievable. It's amazing. He is absolutely fallen in love with it. He loves everything around it. And I just think they're buying into that. He's buying into him. He's getting the best out of the players. What he's done with his centre forward,
Calvert-Lewin,
it's unbelievable, isn't it? It's absolutely stunning.
Are they going to beat United this weekend?
I wouldn't be shocked by it. I absolutely wouldn't be shocked by it because he's got the best out of them. And by the way, Gomez being back.
Yeah.
Did anyone see that? I was there the day that happened. And it's when I think, oh my God, that could be the career.
Well, it's an interesting back. Portuguese midfield duel as he comes up against Bruno Fernandes. But he did look like he improved Everton a lot when he came on against Arsenal last weekend.
There's that ball through that Leno had to come out of his box to save because Bellerin is a bit sure that. I think even Sigurdsson complained that only Gomez can play that ball through in that Everton team. And for him to come back for them, I think it's a big boost just for things like that.
All right. Another big game in that race for fourth and fifth. Everton, by the way, are down 11th. But win this and they'd only be 2 points behind Man United. He said stretching things a bit. But Spurs and Wolves, meanwhile, Spurs coming into this just a point behind United in sixth. Wolves are only a point behind them. Mourinho versus Nuno. Speaking of Portuguese duels, Nuno, who played for Jose at Porto. If you were hiring a manager right now, Jules, I wonder which you'd pick.
I'd pick Nuno. Mm. And there's also obviously the fact that they just not played for each other. Also very close friends because of Jorge Mendes. Nuno, you know, was the first client of Jorge Mendes. So there's a lot of background in that story. But I still do think that today, despite Mourinho not being the manager that he was one day, I still think that for any Portuguese manager facing Mourinho is like, okay, this is the ultimate test. And whether that's Souza, AVB, Nuno, whoever, I think when you're Portuguese, Mourinho means so much to Portuguese football that you must have that sort of extra motivation of like, I need to beat him, I need to outsmart him tactically, I need to find something to beat him. And it's always a big test. And I think it would be exactly the same for Nuno going to Tottenham on Sunday to try to prove again, look, I can do better than you. I can tactically. And let's be honest, this season at Spurs, there's not many managers who didn't outsmart Jose. And we saw that with Lampard last weekend as well. So I would not be surprised if Nuno, you know, keeping in his 3-4-3 formation, because that's always the plan, but finds a way of beating Mourinho tactically.
Okay, Wolves in action this Thursday evening, 4-0 up from the first leg against Espanyol.
They play the kids.
I mean, the only thing you can say is obviously Spurs didn't have a game this week, so Mourinho's had a whole week to prepare his excuses for Sunday, so
he's also not got a striker.
Right.
Really? He should have mentioned it.
Yeah.
Okay, meanwhile, remember this.
From Azpilicueta, back in from Lerma, and the flag stays down. It does, it goes up in the end as Gosling is cleared off the line anyway, but the flag's already up. Unfortunately, Gosling thought it was in. Let's calm down for a second, Willow, because Gosling, I think, is onside, and that ball, I think, has gone over the line. What's Graham Scott saying? He's got his finger to his ear, he's getting the message, he's picking up the ball, Graham Scott,
goal.
And he has given the goal! VAR! Just when you need it most!
Yeah, that the sound of Dan Gosling's stunner last December when he brilliantly read Chelsea's defence and kind of backed in towards goal to score a wonderfully opportunistic strike which won the game for.
It's funny that I thought you found somewhere a tape, a recording of him moaning about the referees not being too nice with
John Moss
and all like that. Oh,
yeah, so right.
Is this like Care Bear world or what? Like what kind of world are we in?
Well, if you're going to say Bournemouth, surely as the nearest club to Peppa Pig world, you'd have done with that.
Is there such a thing as Peppa Pig world?
Yeah, where's that?
Poulton's Park, about midway between Southampton and Bournemouth.
What happens when you go to the Peppa Pig world?
You are in a world of magic and Peppa.
Have you been, Duncan?
I went once, yeah.
All right.
I went last summer. I was there with all three Lawrence's children.
Pat, have you been to...
Best day of my life.
Yeah. I'm going to get my chin off the floor. Okay. But having said that, I'm down at Bournemouth for the game, so I'll pop along
to
Peppa Pig.
You're going to this game, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Bournemouth's looking to do the double, clearly, over Chelsea. They also hammered the Blues in this fixture 4-0. When was that? Last January. Where do you stand, by the way, on Dan Gosling calling out referee John Moss for being snide about relegation?
I'm really happy you say that because I ain't no snowflake and I kind of like a little bit of digs here and there. But you know what? If the referee, you're going to have a little dig like that, just accept the stuff that you're going to get back from
Does
the players.
Does it happen a lot?
I love it when it's two-way, but it must be two-way.
Right.
You know, so
it's always one-way, right?
Yes.
Players insulting the refs.
Correct.
So why can't it be sometimes the other way around?
Then, do you know what? Because you're supposed to put them in a slight pedestal. It's like your headmaster at school and all that sort of thing. Right. So if he turns around and he's snide to you and clever with
and
you.
The allegation was that he talked about Bournemouth, oh, you guys are going down. No?
Yes. And, it's kind of one of the things that would offend him. To be honest, if a referee said that to me, I would say, okay, it's open season, I'm allowed to have a dig back. That's fine. Mm. But if the referee then books you for having a dig back, then it's not. As long as it's two-way.
Wait till Dan Gosling finds out about Matt Davis Adams. He's going to be furious, isn't he?
Yeah.
What's Matt done? Excuse me, my friend Matt?
Well, Matt's... he's been harsh on Bournemouth and the causes of Bournemouth.
Really?
He's basically, he tipped them for going down somewhere back at the start of the season, more or less, which caused, outbreaks of hilarity. But how right he could potentially be, although I'm just looking at the table now, Bournemouth are, they're only 2 points above the bottom three. Big game that against Chelsea, a Chelsea team reeling from Tuesday night's hammering by Bayern Munich. That game coming up 3 o'clock Saturday. Also this weekend, a couple more games to bring you. Norwich face Leicester on Friday night. Leicester haven't had a goal from Jamie Vardy in 8 games. And Norwich see that and raise them. Haven't scored from open play in the Premier League since New Year's Day. You excited about this clash of Canaries and Foxes, Jules?
Yeah, I think so. And Vardy was interesting if you look at the game against City, for example, where he didn't score, but I think his expected goals was 0.45, which is a very decent expected goal stats for a striker like him. So I think that the chances are there. He's going through a bit of a drought. There was the birth of the baby. I think, even the team as a whole is not playing as well as they were in the first half of the season when he was scoring so freely. So I think he will come back. And I think Norwich, with their very leaky defence, could be the place for him to get back on the score sheet again. But it's been a bit tougher for Leicester the last few weeks.
Yeah, understandably so, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
If you've played against Chelsea, you've played against Wolves, and you've played against Manchester City. Mm. It's a tough gig, but they still find themselves in third place. And I have to say it now, Leicester City at Chelsea, I was at that game. It's my favourite game of the season so far.
Yeah,
favourite game of the season so far. And the reason being, so many games we go to see just now, and it is a game of chess, isn't it? You know, it's tactically this, and we talk of Pep doing this, and it's great. We all love that, and particularly on the Totally Football Show, we love that. And now and again, you want people to say, forget all that, let's just have a game of football. Just go and attack each other. And there was no tactics, and it was brilliant. And it was like Brendan and Frank had come up between each other before the game and said, do you know what? Should we just leave the tactics and just have a game of football? Honestly, it was like a park game. I loved it. You need that cleanser now and again.
Your favourite game of the season so far, but then we haven't had Newcastle Burnley yet. Pat Nevin. So we'll come back to you next week and see what you think about that. No team has scored fewer Premier League goals than Newcastle. Fewer shots, fewer touches in the opposition box. Burnley, on the other hand, are flying. 13 points from the last 15 available.
But I was at Newcastle Norwich, and for me, that was the best game of the season. It was... No, I'm kidding.
Okay, all right. Now, still to come, we're going to be dipping into the post bag. Lots of questions about Chelsea and hearing about a huge weekend in Europe, including the latest on Alan Pardew's adventures with Den Haag. But first, though, here's producer Ben with Paddy Power.
Thank you very much, Jimbo. Producer Ben here on the line with Lee Price from Paddy Power, surprisingly. Lee, let's start with the Premier League, please. Ancelotti versus Solskjaer on Sunday. Is it going to be a happy away day, though, for United when they go to Goodison Park?
Well, to be totally honest with you, we're not sure, which I think actually is fair enough to say about any game featuring United or Everton. Our odds are incredibly tightly priced, given neither sides were the most convincing this season. Everton are 6-4 to win it, United are 9-5. Or, to translate those numbers into the same ballpark, we rate Everton's chances at 30-20, United's at 36-20. Very, very close. The draw is 23-10, while Dominic Calvert-Lewin is the most likely player of the two sides to score.
Further down the league, it's Brighton, the only team in the top division yet to win this year. So what are the odds, please, on them taking all 3 points against Crystal Palace?
My mind's telling me no, but my traders are telling me yeah. Brighton are even money favourites to win this game, and with it take 3 valuable points and the fictional derby bragging rights. Neither team, though, are exactly on hot streaks, but Palace did win last time out. It's 11-4 they do so again here. While Brighton have drawn their last three on the bounce and four out of the last five, so shared spoils at 11-4 could be interesting. All four of those Brighton draws, by the way, have been score draws. So here's one to look at. 7-2, that this one is a tie with both teams notching.
And finally to Wembley, the Carabao Cup final, Aston Villa versus Man City. How high are those numbers stacked against Villa?
Yeah, what can I say? They're up against it. I don't really know how to dress it up. Usually, you suggest a pair of heels, perhaps. But they already face one almighty heel in the shape of Pep Guardiola's men. In the match odds betting, we go 16-1 for a Villa win, with Man City priced at 1-8. A draw and extra time is 13-2. We go 10-1 a team wins in extra time, or 16-1 it's decided on penalties. Manchester City to win the League Cup, regardless of method, is 1-25.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. A big weekend in the way, Jules. You flagged this up on Tuesday, actually, how there's this convergence of massive fixtures. Carabao Cup, Juve Inter, which they're now saying may actually have a crowd. They may have decided not to hold it behind closed doors. As it stands, the ruling was that five games this weekend in Italy would be held without any attending fans because of the fears over COVID-19. There's also the Clásico in Spain Sunday night, Real against Barcelona. Ajax taking on AZ Alkmaar in the top two clash in the Eredivisie. Some other stuff, probably. Yeah,
The Rhône Derby in France.
Derby du Rhône.
MLS starting as well.
MLS starting. Have you heard their new theme tune?
Yeah.
Composed by Hans Zimmer. It sounds like this. Wow. Talk about Days of Thunder.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Who would you pick to have a theme tune for the Premier League? A new theme tune for the Premier League? Like... The who would be the Hans
which
Zimmer?
Which composer?
Yeah, Hans Zimmer of the Premier League.
Well, how do you mean? In what way?
Like, would you get Elton John to do something on the piano? Or who would you go for?
I don't know.
Alexis Sanchez, maybe. Got to do something
the piano.
On the piano. I'm not sure, Jules. It's an interesting question. Yeah, well, perhaps listeners have a thought of their own. Anyway, so
I can't believe you've done all this and you haven't even mentioned the biggest game of the weekend.
Is it in Scotland?
Yeah, Hibs Hearts.
Ah, wow. Okay. Well, that'd be huge.
I've always wanted to go to that.
Yeah.
But you've never been, yeah? There's a reason, you know?
No, Duncan, we'll go together because yeah. I'd be curious as well. Sing a bit of Sunshine on Leith.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be
yeah.
so emotional. Yeah.
So you're saying Hibs are going to win anyway? Because they always sing that at the end of Hibs win.
Oh, is it only yeah. when they win? See, that's how much I know.
But when Hibs finally won the Scottish Cup after all those years and the crowd singing that at the end, that was...
Do you know the story about that? That would never have been seen other than the fact that I, in the studio, said, I refuse to speak now. And they had to go out and show the footage because they were just going to talk in the studio and they said, I will not talk.
We did a great thing.
Wow. So, all right, well, now, Jules, you're going to go because you're going to go off and do some Five Live.
Yes.
All right, well, have a great one and I'll see you later.
Thank you very much.
For the BT Sport Europa League Goals show.
Talking of Dutch football, did we see that Alan Pardew is very much on trial in The Hague at the moment? the supporters basically invaded training this week with clipboards to complain about the tactics and management of Ten Hag.
With clipboards?
Because they're really unimpressed with how it's going. So that's
they're
not...
great fans, aren't they? I mean, they welcomed him with that incredible Ghostbusters display.
Mm.
But now they're, you know,
enacting. Now it's really turned into a horror film. So,
right.
Yeah, not good.
That's slightly different from the Italian fans who turned up at the training grounds. That was slightly a wee bit more.
Yeah. Anyway, a massive weekend of football all around the continent. I mentioned your questions. Quite a few on Chelsea. But let's start off with this one from Phil, who says, how do the panel react to Man City emotionally? They've always left me cold. At least with Chelsea, says Phil, you could hate them. Well, that's a bit harsh, but...
I kind of know what he means in a sense, and I guess we've kind of seen that this season with the fact that there's record viewing figures for the Premier League, even though Liverpool are running away with it,
right.
Because everyone kind of wants to see Liverpool make history. Well, most people do.
And yet people don't hate Man City?
I think City...
Are they seen as something like an abstract concept?
Yeah, it's more of a kind of art installation, particularly the Pep era. It's a, you know, you can be wildly impressed by City, but I think if you sat a random person down on the street and said, name your five best City Premier League performances of the last decade, some don't spring to mind immediately.
Well, it's because they're all the same. And they're all rather good, you know, so there is that.
But on the subject of Man City in general, I'm not suggesting people should hate them, just that it's curious to have a team that was so dominant and do it, as you say, with, by means of extraordinary, with the injection of extraordinary wealth, that it hasn't stirred up more.
I mean, I guess the one City moment that will live on forever is the Aguero, yeah. And that very much was, you know, they were grasping glory from adversity there. And I guess if you do win the league by 19 points, if you do get 100 points, it does just become a bit, you know...
James, I think it's a brilliant point. I think you're digging to get to somewhere that is actually very important. I think you're right. You know, had that been any other team who had done it in this way, that, you know, the authorities have come down hard on them and basically financial doping. That's the phrasing that would be used just now. So we have to be serious about City, you know. They're not all cuddly all the time. And yes, Chelsea got hammered for that. Battered for that under Roman Abramovich. Yeah. And even people didn't like Man United because it was a big behemoth.
Is it because Man City went through so much, so many hard times?
Mm. Yeah, and they are outsiders. I mean, they've come from not exactly nowhere.
And is it also the fact that they knocked Man United off the Mancunian perch? Yeah. That
well, also, I feel sorry in some ways for the true City fans who were there in, you know, the League One era and stuff, because I think the difference between City and Liverpool and Manchester United and Arsenal and whoever is that they've got just as loyal fans that go, you know, home and away, but they don't have this kind of social media presence as much. And I think that has hampered them a little bit when it comes to when they are in the news for stuff like they are recently. You know, they don't have this kind of huge groundswell of support. And yeah, that's what we see.
Right. Okay. Christian asks, will Tammy Abraham develop into the top striker Chelsea need him to be? He didn't gamble on a couple of great crosses that Chelsea did create in the Bayern match. Where do you stand on Tammy Abraham, Pat?
Yeah, still really young. And it's the classic moment where you watch Lewandowski when the ball is played across to him and he's standing at the back post with the kind of cigarette in his hand going, yeah, I'll just tap this one in. Because he knows how to get there all the time. Chelsea do the same things 10 minutes before, zipped across and Tammy's not there. And it's exactly where you should be. And it sometimes takes a wee while to get that. You know, Lewandowski's can always do that. I can almost guess the next question. Is it a natural thing? You do strikers. I play with plenty of strikers where if I put it in there, I'll turn away before he scores because I know he'll be there. You know, I played with Aldridge and McCoist and people like that. It doesn't matter. They're going to be there. And that's what they're asking.
Well, that's interesting because even in the autumn when Abraham was scoring a lot, he hadn't had a single shot in the six-yard box. All his goals were from either outside the box or round about the penalty spot.
So what is the answer to your question, Pat? Can you learn that? Is that something that develops?
No, you can learn it.
You can.
But not to a level of a Lineker and all them. And you know exactly the type of player we're talking about here. And
Do you think he has it in him?
I don't actually think it's that difficult with Chelsea to do it. And the reason being, there's about four or five of them at the moment. You've
and
got somebody
one
who's
on the way.
Yeah, on the right hand side, Reece James is as good as anyone, you know, up there with Alexander Arnold and with the Beckhams as a quality crosser.
Right.
Now that's a big call to make, but he has got that delivery. Do you know what? You're an idiot if you don't realise he's going to do that after a while. Keep on getting there. Now Tammy's got there a few times this season, actually not managed to score the goals for him, but he's got there a few times. And if you just keep on doing it, he will A, learn it, and B, it will become natural after a while.
All right. Danny Barrigan was asking if you stood by your rating of Reece James as equal to Alexander Arnold from a previous podcast. Clearly, you do.
He's phenomenal of the quality of the group. Now, not the consistency, but at the moment, it's a very technical thing, the technical ability to put it. I think there's one guy who's even better than them all at technical ability. He crossed a ball just now from particularly dead balls. And I think Snodgrass is maybe the best that there is. He's probably the best that there is. Pure, the technical ability to do it. But that's, he'll not make as many goals. He'll not, you know, they don't get as many up the pitch. But the quality of crosses, particularly from dead balls from him, is beyond unbelievable. It's just amazing. I mean, that Liverpool game was that the other night. There, honestly, it was a joy to watch it. Everywhere you looked, there was this one thing that everyone used to say, only ever Beckham. And I'm looking around and I'm seeing four, five and six people that are that quality at the moment.
Pat, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a real treat. Julien, of course, also part of today's proceedings. Lovely to have him on board, as well as the very great Duncan Alexander. We will return with the Totally Football Show early on Monday morning. Sasha Gurionov, Daniel Story and Carl Anker will be in Sunday night to round up the weekend for you. Do hope you have a super weekend, and join us then on Monday morning. From now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Hello, I'm Emma.
And I'm Jeffers.
And we're the Series Linked podcast. Subscribe to our channel for all of the biggest TV interviews.
And to stay on top of all the latest telly.
It said Gervais sometimes fluffs his lines, like I'd have left them in.
It's a stunning place to shoot.
I'll like put something up on Instagram and then somebody will post going, oh, you look at you lazy-eyed and you're ugly, ain't you?
And on the way in upcoming episodes, we speak to Imelda Staunton, David Baddiel, Carl Pilkington and many more. Just search for Series Linked. That's Series Linked.
Muddy Knees Media.